Blackstone Audio and Buck 50 Productions present Carter Diamond. Before the Cartel, He Stood Alone by Ashley and Jaquavis. This book is read by Carrie Height. Chapter 1. Flint, Michigan, 1980. The sounds of Curtis Mayfield sounded through the jukebox's speakers, echoing throughout the empty locksmith shop. The soundtrack to every ghetto boy, girl, man, and woman pounded out of the speakers and was a perfect fit for Flint at that time. The only soul in the building was a slim 17-year-old kid. A toothpick hung slightly out of the left side of his mouth as he carefully mopped the floor, making sure he didn't miss a spot. His foot rhythmically tapped the floor as he finished up his 10-hour shift. The sun was just setting, barely providing lights on the streets of Flint, Michigan. Carter looked at the clock and saw that it was a couple of strokes before 8 p.m. He couldn't wait to clock out. It had been a long day, and he wanted nothing more than to kick his feet up in relaxation. Carter, the only child to a dope fiend mother, had bigger plans than that hot, sweaty shop that he slaved at. He knew he wanted more out of life than the meager wages he earned. There had to be a bigger picture than the small one he saw outside of his dirty window. His only mission was to find out how to make it out of the ghetto. Carter heard someone entering through the back, and his eyes shot towards the rear of the shop. Seconds later, a large Dominican man entered. It was the owner, Hector, and he had a mafioso swagger as he slowly walked in. He was well over 300 pounds and wore a wife beater, exposing the abundance of slick hair that rested in the middle of his chest. Suspenders held up his pants, and a half-smoked cigar hung from his mouth. The smell of Cuban cigars and cheap cologne entered the room along with his massive frame. "Carter, I want you to meet someone real quick. Stop mopping for a second," Hector said, as he stepped to the side and made room for someone else to enter. In walked a young Dominican teenager.
"Yes, sir,"
Carter said, as he put the mop in the bucket and walked towards Hector and the young man.
"This is my nephew, Sam,"
Hector said, as he smacked his wild nephew on the back of the head.
"Sam, this is Carter. You could learn a few things from him. He is a respectable young man, not a knucklehead motherfucker like you,"
Carter said half-jokingly as he cracked a smile. Sam, with a smug smile, unenthusiastically stepped forward after getting a small nudge from his uncle.
"Yo, I'm Sam," he said as he rolled his eyes and didn't even look Carter in the face.
"Carter Diamond," Carter said as he shook his hand firmly, demanding his attention. Hector made his way to the cash register and emptied it. He only retrieved 40 bucks from the drawer, the day's earnings. That was because he made little to nothing in his locksmith business. It was all a front to hide his extensive criminal activity. He ran a numbers ring and sent money down to the boss monthly. He came from a drug family, but he decided to head north and get some of that black dollar money in the ghettos of Flint. Nevertheless, he always made sure the boss back home got a cut of his business. The boss happened to be his brother, Estes. Estes was one of the biggest and most active drug dealers in the country. His name rang bells on the black market, and he had been running most of southern Florida, particularly Miami, for years.
"Listen up. Sam is going to be hanging around here for the summer. You know, helping us out a little. I want you to show him the ropes and how we operate around here. Got it?"
Hector said as he looked at Carter.
"No problem,"
Carter said in his low, even voice. Carter was very mild-mannered and a great worker. He and Hector had a great relationship, and even though Hector never told Carter he loved him, Carter knew that the old man had a soft spot in his heart for him. They had an unspoken bond. Hector, not having any kids of his own, took a liking to Carter 4 years back when he approached him for a job. Hector respected his business demeanor, and even at an early age, Carter had a certain calmness and sense of loyalty about himself.
"Don't get into any trouble, you hear me?"
Hector said, as he walked towards Sam, pointing his finger at him. Hector gave Sam another smack on the back of the head for good measure, and he headed out of the back door.
"Oh yeah, we have a job on Saginaw Street tomorrow. Old man Johnson needs his locks changed again,"
Hector said, just before the sound of the back door being closed sounded. Carter glanced at Sam, who leaned against the wall and folded his arms while looking around.
"So, Uncle Hector got you cleaning this shithole for pennies, huh? Sam said with a smirk on his face, getting a chuckle from his own joke. Carter glanced at Sam and shook his head, not even responding to the offhand remark. Carter grabbed the mop out of the bucket and continued to mop the floor while shaking his head. Sam walked to the back and made sure that the door was locked. He then came back into the store area and pulled a rolled joint out. He began to spark it, and Carter rushed over to him and snatched it out of his mouth before he lit it.
Yo, what's your deal?
Sam asked as he threw both of his arms up.
There is no smoking in here, homeboy,
Carter said calmly as he slipped the joint into Sam's top pocket.
Who are you worried about? Hector? He works for my pops, so there is nothing to worry about,
Sam said arrogantly as he pulled back out his joint and sparked it, releasing the skunk smell of Miami's finest into the air.
Well, I work for Hector, and I need this job. If I were you, I wouldn't jeopardize my money like that,
he said, as he put up the mop bucket and grabbed his jacket that hung on the coat rack.
Job? I don't need this job, my man,
Sam said, as he reached into his pocket and pulled out a wad of $100 bills. His bankroll was the biggest Carter had ever seen in his life.
If it's laying like that, why are you up here working for the summer?
Carter asked out of curiosity.
I wasn't sent up here to work in a fucking locksmith shop. My father wanted me to stop wilding out back home, so he and my mother had this great idea to send me up here with Uncle Hector,
he said, as he took a deep pull of the reefer.
Oh, yeah?
Carter said, as he slid his cap on and began to lock up the doors. Carter immediately knew that Sam wasn't his type. Too flashy. Carter, even at a young age, knew that bad boys moved in silence.
Well, I'm about to lock up. We need to be here tomorrow at 9 a.m. so we can go to old man Johnson's house to change his locks,
Carter said, as he began to click off the lights to the store.
Who is old man Johnson?
Sam asked out of curiosity.
An old school gangster. He was the number man in the city. Actually, he's retired. But he gets so paranoid, he likes his locks to get changed every month. Don't ask me why. It's just something that he does.
Carter headed towards the rear exit.
9 a.m. sharp. Lock up when you're done,
Carter said, just before he faded into the darkness of the night. Carter tucked his hands in his pants pockets and lowered his head as he headed north towards his home. He had been gone all day and was eager to get home to check on his mother. He blended into the hustle of the hood as he walked through the streets. He bypassed so much pain, so much heartache. Dope fiends wandered aimlessly, and prostitutes strolled the block as they all chased the vice. Whether it was money or drugs, it didn't matter. They were all addicted to the fast life, and eventually they would crash and burn. Carter maneuvered through the ill streets that he called his neighborhood without a care in the world. To an outsider, Flint, Michigan seemed dangerous. But to those like Carter, who had come up amongst the chaos, it was home. He took the long way home, so that he could stop by Tanya's house. Tanya was his girlfriend, an around-the-way girl who shared a bond with Carter. As he crossed North Saginaw Street, he saw Tanya's apartment. He made his way towards it, and as he got closer, he saw one of his best friends posted on the stoop.
Polo, what's up, man?
Carter said as he approached the young hustler.
What's the haves, baby?
Polo greeted smoothly as he stuck out his hand and displayed his charming smile. Polo was 18 years old and a certified hustler. His game was that dog food, better known as heroin to squares. Polo wore a two-piece Adidas jogging suit with the matching shell toes. He topped it off with a cocaine white Kango hat, which he slightly let lean to the left. Polo slapped hands with his childhood friend, and his rings made a clinking noise as they rubbed together. He made it a point to have gold rings on every finger to let the world know he was getting money. Carter, on the other hand, had no jewelry, no fresh threads, but he was sharper than anyone who ever stood on that block. Carter always strayed away from street life. He couldn't see himself selling the same drug that had ruined his mother and eventually destroyed his own childhood. Carter put both of his hands in his pockets and scanned the block.
You just getting off work?
Polo asked as he looked at a customer approaching.
You know it,
Carter confirmed as he looked away so Polo could handle his business. Polo slyly made the transaction for a $10 bag. As the fiend hurried away,
Polo looked at Carter's clothing. Carter kept himself neat, but his clothes were worn out. Polo couldn't help but chuckle as he scanned him. "What's so funny?" Carter asked with an ice grill as he looked down at his own attire and stepped back.
"I'm just saying, all the money around here for the taking, and you scared to get your hands dirty. That damn shop ain't paying no real money. Why don't you come and get down with the program?"
Polo asked as he handed another approaching fiend a packet.
"The program? Nigga, you stand on this block all day and hope you meet your day's quota. At least I know how much I make, and I can cut out the guesswork," Carter said, as he rubbed his hands together and broke down his reasoning for being absent from the street game.
"I sometimes make $500 a day. What it takes you, like a whole month to clear what I can do in a night?"
Polo contested, as he pulled out a bankroll and flashed it.
"Yeah, that's all cool until the boys come and snatch you up, and then what? You gone for a year? While you gone for that year, I'm going to continue to make that steady $500 a month with no worries. It all evens out, my nigga. And if I ever do step into this shit, it'll have to be worth it. It'll have to be enough to get my mother out of here for good. If I ever go to jail, it's going to be in a federal joint. Believe that," Carter said calmly, with a slight smirk on his face. "You a county jail nigga," Carter joked, as he displayed his smile. Both of them burst out into laughter and slapped hands. Although they were in two different lanes, they were cut from the same cloth. "Yeah, you right. Leave this shit to me. You going to be the way we both get up out of here. I know it,"
Polo said, truly believing what he had just said. He knew how smart Carter was, and he was definitely beyond his years. Greatness reeked from him, and Polo realized it.
In due time, Carter mumbled. "Yo, you seen Tanya?"
Carter asked as he looked around, knowing that he was in his girlfriend's stumping ground.
"Yeah, she was out here earlier this morning, trying to get her begging-ass mama off the block,"
Polo answered honestly.
"Damn, for real?"
said Carter, and he shook his head in disappointment. He knew the feeling of having a drug addict mother embarrassing you. He knew it all too well.
"All right, I'm about to go up here and check on her," Carter said, as he held out his hand and then slapped five with Polo. "Okay, cool. Well, you know where I will be,"
Polo said. And just like that, Carter was gone. Carter headed to the building where Tanya resided. Carter walked through the piss-infested hallways and up the flights of stairs to visit his longtime girlfriend. He reached her door and noticed that it was slightly open. He pushed it open and entered as he began to call for her.
"Tanya!"
Carter called as his eyes scanned the small apartment.
"I'm back here!"
he heard Tanya yell from the back room. He knew she was in the bathroom because of the resonating echo. Carter went to the back and saw that Tanya had her mother in a tub while fully clothed. Carter immediately knew what was going on. Tanya was trying to wake her mother from a dope fiend lean. People of the ghetto called it that when a person was nodding from the effects of heroin. Carter leaned in the doorway and watched as Tanya ran the cold water from the shower onto her mother's face.
"You need help?"
Carter asked, knowing exactly what she was going through. He had many nights where he was doing the same procedure for his junkie mother.
"No, I'm good,"
she said casually, as she began to slap her mother's face, as her frail body periodically jerked while she was coming too.
"I'll be in the front then," Carter said, as he pulled off his hat and gripped it tightly in his hands.
Carter headed to the living room and took a seat in the small setting. He looked around and admired the way that Tanya kept the apartment looking nice, although poverty was evident. She made it work with what they had. Before he finished his thought, Tanya entered the room with a small towel in hand as she dried herself off.
"Hey, Carter."
"Hey, Tanya," he said as he stood up respectably.
"Sorry about that. Had to get her together,"
she said as she hugged him and rested her head on his chest. He loomed over her and gave her a warm embrace. It was like his body swallowed her, and she loved the feeling of security while in his clutches.
"Don't worry about it. You don't have to apologize for that. It's not your fault,"
he responded.
"You always make everything feel better,"
Tanya said as she looked at him and smiled. Carter looked down at her with big brown eyes and smooth chocolate skin, never remembering seeing anything more beautiful. Her baby hair rested perfectly along her edges, while the rest of her thick black hair was neatly pulled into a ponytail. "That's what I'm here for, right?" Carter said, just before he gave her a peck on the forehead. "That's right. My knight in shining armor," she said. Carter had been with Tanya since their freshman year in high school. Carter and Tanya shared a special connection, and through that connection, they found young love. Both being products of broken homes, it was easy to relate to one another. Carter took a seat, and Tanya sat next to him. "How was work?" she asked him.
"It was cool. Hector's nephew just came up here from Miami to start working," he revealed.
"Are you playing nice?" Tanya asked, knowing Carter like the back of her hand. She could tell he didn't care for him too much by his tone of voice. Carter looked into Tanya's eyes and gave her his charming smile. He wasn't interested in talking about Sam. He was just happy to see his girl.
"I can think about a million different things to talk about other than work," he said, just before he leaned in and kissed her gently.
The feeling sent chills up her spine as he gently cupped her face.
"The only thing I want to think about is how to make you happy. I promise I am going to be big time one day, and when I do, I'm going to give you the world. I promise,"
Carter said, as he kissed the only girl he had ever truly loved. Chapter 2. It was 9 o'clock sharp, and Carter loaded the company's van with the toolbox that was needed to do the job. Sam sat in the passenger side yawning and still half asleep.
"These locks couldn't wait until later," Sam complained as he slouched in his seat.
He hated the fact that he had to get up so early. He hadn't been up before noon since his high school days. His fast life in Miami had him spoiled and made him reckless, which were the reasons why his father sent him up north in the first place. Carter jumped into the driver's side and started up the car. Old Man Johnson's house was in the same neighborhood as the shop, so they arrived quickly after bending a couple of corners. They both remained silent as they cruised through the back streets and eventually into Old Man Johnson's driveway. The large two-story brick home sat in the Fifth Ward of Flint, easily the most lucrative black market in the city. Everyone had a vice. Either you sold sex, bought sex, sold drugs, or used them. In the midst of it all, everybody gambled, and Old Man Johnson controlled that part of the game. Even though he had retired, he still got his cut and was well respected in the community. As Carter and Sam pulled up, Sam began to complain how early it was, but Carter blocked him out, knowing that they had a job to do. Carter and Sam got out of the car and headed into the home. Old Man Johnson always left a key for Carter under the mat when he was scheduled to have his locks changed. They entered the house, and Sam couldn't believe what he saw. The outside looked like a large, ordinary brick house, with nothing extravagant or special about it. However, when Sam walked in with Carter, he saw something unexpected. He saw a palace of an underground king. Marble floors and hand-painted ceilings stunned him at first sight.
"Damn, this place is laid the fuck out,"
Sam added as he looked around in amazement.
"Let's switch these locks and get out of here," Carter said, not wanting to have small talk with Sam.
Carter put his tools on the ground and began to unscrew the locks on the front door, his regular routine.
"Damn, this cat must have really done well in the number game, huh?"
Sam asked, as he continued to look around while Carter began to work. Carter shot Sam a look of disgust and shook his head in disbelief. Although Carter wasn't a street hustler, he knew the rules very well. He knew to never talk about another man's money, unless you were making plans to make money with that man or plans on taking it. The old saying goes, make money, take money. The unwritten rules of the streets.
"Hand me that flathead," Carter said,
as he totally disregarded Sam's comment and reached out his hand. Sam chuckled and shook his head. He then reached into the bag and handed Carter the screwdriver.
"Where is the bathroom in this place?"
Sam asked, as he scanned the stairs that led to the upstairs.
"Upstairs to the right," Carter said,
as he threw his head in the direction of the stairs. Sam instantly went up the stairs, and Carter focused on the task at hand. Sam drifted upstairs and his mind began to spin. He knew that Old Man Johnson had a stash spot somewhere, and if he did, he was determined to find it. His eyes quickly scanned the place as he tried to figure out which of the five rooms he was about to look in first. Although Sam came from money, his brain was trained to always look for the big score. He didn't know Carter good enough to include him in his plans, so he tried to be as quiet as he could as he rummaged through the rooms. I know he got a stash in this motherfucker, he thought to himself as he entered the first room. Sam immediately knew it was the master bedroom because of the king-sized bed and floor-model television. He quickly ran over to the walk-in closet and noticed the neatly hung suits that lined his walls, accompanied by shiny gator shoes on the floor. He immediately focused on the stacked shoeboxes on the shelves. He quickly began to pop them open, hoping he would hit the jackpot. After checking every box, he only found old shoes and empty boxes. Fuck, he mumbled under his breath as he realized that he didn't have that much time before Carter noticed he was gone for an extended amount of time. Sam quickly stacked up the boxes back how they were originally and headed towards the drawers. As he rummaged through them, he found nothing special. His hopes of finding a stash quickly began to fade as he began to grow frustrated. He then looked over at the massive California king-sized bed and immediately rushed over to look under it. Just like the rest of the spots, Sam found nothing special. It wasn't until he lifted up the mattress that he discovered the jackpot. What he saw made his heart skip a beat, and his hands began to sweat. Nothing looked sweeter than what was in front of him at the time. Stacks and stacks of big-face bills, wrapped in plastic, lined the mattress. Bingo, he whispered under his breath as he ripped open a block and began to line his waistline with the stacks of bills. He stuffed all of his pockets and even put bills in the soles of his shoes. He managed to stuff over $20,000 on his body in the matter of 4 minutes. He put the mattress back in place and headed downstairs. Carter was at the back door by then, and Sam called for him as he reached the main floor.
Yo, I'm going to wait in the van. I'm not feeling too well, Sam yelled as he headed to the front door.
He wanted to leave that spot as soon as possible. He couldn't stop smiling, and Carter couldn't get done fast enough for him. Sam got in the van and waited nervously. He was beginning to like Flint after all. The next day, Carter was in the shop along with Hector and Sam. Sam swept the floor as Carter was helping an older woman check out.
Thank you so much, young man. It's always good to have a couple extra keys made. I'm so forgetful nowadays, I need to keep a few sets, the woman said.
No problem, ma'am. Glad we could help, Carter responded.
Hector sat in the corner reading the sports page while smoking a cigar. Sam was counting the days he would return home. He wanted to get out of the city quick so that he could celebrate his caper, Miami style. As Carter finished up with the customer, in walked three African-American men, all of them wearing tailor-made suits. Their presence commanded attention as they came in with serious expressions on their faces. Seconds later, a slim elderly man entered with a cane in his right hand. He wore a nice suit and a top hat that had a feather on its side. It wasn't long before Carter noticed who it was. It was Old Man Johnson, an original gangster and legend in the city. The men parted as if Moses himself was coming through, and Johnson took his time as he stood front and center. He slowly removed his hat like a gentleman and looked around the place.
Good afternoon, young men,
he said in his smooth, deep baritone, focused his attention on Hector. He nodded at Carter and then at Sam before he focused his attention on Hector.
How may I help you, Johnson?
Hector said, as he slowly put down his newspaper and stood up. He grew curious about the sudden visit from Johnson and his henchmen. He didn't appreciate the surprise visit.
Sorry to come unannounced, but I have a matter that needs to be resolved, Johnson said, respectfully without changing his tone.
What's that?
Hector asked, as he glanced at Carter and walked towards Johnson.
You see, I had something taken away from me yesterday. Now, I am a logical man, and I think everything out before I act on it. I haven't made it 62 years on this earth by being foolish. What I'm trying to tell you is, somebody from your establishment took something that didn't belong to them. $20,000 to be exact.
What? Carter, is it any truth in this?
Hector asked, while frowning up and taking a puff of his cigar.
No, sir,
Carter said, as he wiped down the counter.
Carter knew that he hadn't taken anything from Old Man Johnson. He wasn't a thief, but as his mind recalled the event, he remembered that Sam had disappeared for quite a while. He glanced at Sam.
This dirty motherfucker,
Carter thought. He turned back to Old Man Johnson and Hector, but didn't say any more.
Listen, you have to go and look elsewhere. Nobody from here took a dime from you,
Hector said as he stepped closer to Johnson, now within 2 feet of him.
I know who goes in and out of my house at all times. I know for a fact that whoever you sent in there stole from me,
Johnson said confidently.
Look, I told!
Hector raised his voice, but Johnson cut him off before he could get into his fit of rage by putting his hand up.
No need to get hostile, brother. No reason at all. But I will tell you one thing. I will be here tomorrow at the same time, and I expect to have what was taken from me. Needless to say, I won't hire you for your services of changing my locks again, but it will end there. I will have no ill will or need to retaliate. I will act as if this never happened, like a gentleman would. Have a good day,
Johnson said as he smiled and put his hat on top of his head. He nodded in respect and headed out of the door. His henchmen followed closely behind, and Hector stood there in confusion. He didn't know what the hell was going on.
I don't know what the hell is going on, but if one of you took something from Johnson, I want it on this table when I get back,
Hector said as he pointed to the table he was sitting at.
I am about to go get myself some lunch. I will be back in an hour,
he said, his face scrunched up from his deep frown. Hector exited out of the back, and Carter waited until he heard the back door close until he made his move. As soon as the boom from the door sounded, he darted to Sam and grabbed him up by his collar and forcefully pushed him up against the wall. Sam noticed the rage in Carter's eyes and felt his mighty strength in his grasp immediately.
What the fuck, man?
Sam asked.
Don't what the fuck me. You hit the stash when you went upstairs, didn't you?
Carter asked, as he spoke between his clenched teeth.
I don't know what the fuck you talking about,
Sam lied.
You took the money when you went upstairs. That's why you hot-tailed it out of there when you came down. Where is it?
Yo, fuck that motherfucker. We can split the take and tell Uncle Hector we know nothing about it,
Sam suggested, knowing that Carter knew the truth.
Fuck, you don't get it, do you? Johnson runs this town. Taking something from him is like going to war with the whole city,
Carter schooled.
Man, fuck him. Do you know who my father is? Don't worry about it,
Sam stated arrogantly.
It doesn't matter who your father is in Miami. This is Flint. Different town, different rules. He don't got no pull up here. This shit is like Murderville. Where's the money?
It's in the book bag in the back,
Sam admitted. Carter immediately released him and went to the back to retrieve the bag. Sam straightened up his collar and shook his head. Carter went to the back and saw Sam's book bag. He immediately grabbed it and looked inside. Just like Sam had said, the money was in there. Carter shook his head in disbelief and closed the bag. He picked it up and headed towards the front. That's when the back door opened. It was Hector.
Hey, kid, what's that?
Hector asked as he looked at Carter and then the book bag. Hector had forgotten his car keys and doubled back.
Nothing,
Carter said, as he was at a loss of words.
Give me that bag,
Hector ordered, as he stepped closer to Carter. Carter had no choice but to hand it over. Hector snatched the bag and peeked inside. It broke his heart to see the money stacks inside. The bag had just confirmed what Carter had just denied only minutes before.
You took this?
Hector asked, as he held up the bag. Carter didn't know what to say. He knew that he didn't have anything to do with it, but he couldn't snitch. Even though he didn't know Sam or particularly like him, his integrity wouldn't let him drop a dime on him. Carter's silence was enough to confirm his own guilt in Hector's eyes. Hector shook his head in disappointment. He couldn't believe that Carter would do something like that. He had no choice but to fire him.
Pack your shit, kid. Get the fuck out of here. That is not tolerated here,
he said, as he shook his head once again and left the building. He was on his way to apologize to Johnson and admit that he was wrong. Carter clenched his teeth and knew it was nothing he could do. Rather than snitch, he shook his head and went to the front to grab his jacket. Without even looking at Sam, who had heard everything, Carter exited. He didn't know what he was going to do. He needed that job badly, and his integrity had just cost him his livelihood. He walked to Tanya's house, trying to figure out how to tell her he had lost his job behind some bullshit.
"I'm about to go tell your boss what really happened," Tanya said, as she paced the apartment with her arms folded across her chest.
She couldn't understand why Carter just hadn't told Hector the truth. However, it wasn't for her to understand. Carter understood that him not telling had nothing to do with Sam, but himself. As a man, he had rules he lived and died by. Sometimes sticking to those rules worked for the better, but this particular incident, it was for the worst. A woman would never understand this.
"Don't worry about it, baby. I'm going to bounce back," he responded, as if he didn't have a care in the world.
Carter was smiling on the outside, but definitely hurting on the inside. He had to figure out his next move, but he didn't want to let Tanya know he was stressed about it. Carter grabbed Tanya and pulled her onto his lap, still displaying that infamous smile. He looked into her eyes, and it seemed as if all his worries were temporarily lifted.
"You always make the worst situation seem good. You're a special guy. Do you know that, Mr. Carter Diamond?"
Tanya said, as she wrapped her arms around him while looking into his eyes.
"Of course I know,"
Carter said playfully as he leaned in for a kiss. The touch of his soft lips sent chills up Tanya's back, as well as her love box. Carter leaned back to look in her eyes once again.
"I love you," he said to her in all sincerity. "I love you too."
Carter looked around and then licked his lips.
"How long before your mother gets back?"
he asked.
"She'll be gone for a while,"
Tanya said. That was all Carter needed to hear. He instantly snatched off his shirt, displaying his smooth chocolate skin. He began to passionately kiss Tanya as he peeled off his shirt. He took his time and made sweet love to her right there on the couch, reminding her every minute that he loved her. He took his time and grinded slowly, but with power, as he confessed his love. As he approached his climax, his mind told him to pull out, but his body didn't listen. He released a load inside of her as his body tensed up, and a small moan escaped his lips. He didn't know it then, but he had just created one of the biggest gangsters the world would ever see. An hour later, Carter was on the block with Polo and explaining what had happened to him earlier. In the midst of the conversation, a familiar face was approaching them. It was a young man walking. It was Sam.
"What the fuck you want?"
Carter said as he stepped back and frowned.
"I have been looking for you all day. Your mom said you would be over here,"
Sam said.
"And?"
Carter responded smugly.
"Yo, I come in peace. I need to talk to you,"
Sam said, sensing the tension.
"Well, talk. You could say whatever in front of my man,"
Carter said as he shot a look at Polo. Polo slid his hand down to his waist, where his gun rested. Polo didn't know Sam and was being cautious of the stranger.
"I just want to apologize for what happened earlier,"
Sam said.
"You don't owe me any apologies, player. I'm no snitch. Never been one, and never will be. It had nothing to do with you,"
Carter said honestly.
"I understand that. I just wanted to let you know that you did some real shit. I appreciate that,"
Sam responded. Carter nodded his head slowly, accepting his apology, but remained silent. Sam continued,
"Look, my uncle is sending me back home, not wanting any backlash from the situation."
"What are you telling me for?"
Carter asked, not really caring about that situation anymore. He just wanted to move forward.
"I want you to go with me,"
Sam said as he smiled.
"What?"
Carter asked as he frowned up.
"Look, Miami is a different world from up here. A person like you can get rich down there. I'm talking about filthy rich. I have a coke plug down there. A life-changing plug. With you, we can take that motherfucker over,"
Sam said confidently.
"You don't crack under pressure. I need a motherfucker like you on the team. Plus, I owe you."
Polo looked at Carter, trying to see what he was going to say. Sam had just told Carter what every dope boy wanted to hear in life, that he was connected.
"How do you know the plug is for sure?"
Carter said, knowing he had nothing to lose. He was broke with no job and no plans.
He's my father, Sam stated. The way he said it, Carter and Polo knew he was telling the truth. His eyes told it all. The rest was history. Carter promised Tanya that he would be back to get her, and just like that, he was gone. Miami bound. Chapter 3. A huge cross hung at the front of the Catholic Church as Taryn stood next to her mother, Esmeralda, as they sang a Sunday hymn. Taryn rolled her eyes as she held the book of songs in her hand, as she pretended to mumble the spiritual words. Glued to the pages of her hymnal book were all the latest pages of her Vogue magazines, her hidden entertainment. There was nothing more torturous to Taryn than Sunday Mass, but it was mandatory in her strict household. Every week her mother pulled her out of bed and forced her to church. The only person who was exempt from going was her father, Estes. She heard the sweet melody of her mother's voice, and Taryn paused to admire her. Esmeralda's smooth olive skin revealed her Italian roots. Long jet black hair hung to the middle of her back, while her striking features and high cheekbones gave her a model's beauty. Never admire another woman's beauty more than you do your own, Esmeralda said as she leaned over to whisper in Taryn's ear. You're the most stunning creature on this earth, Taryn. If you think so, the man that you choose will too. Now pay attention. Esmeralda switched hymnal books with her daughter and chuckled quietly when she saw what Taryn had really been looking at. Taryn was definitely her mother's child. Esmeralda pointed her red fingernails to the front of the cathedral to get her daughter to focus, and then turned back towards the altar. Taryn was an exotic mixture of her Dominican-bred father and Italian-born mother. Beauty ran through her veins like blood. Esmeralda had been a model in France before Estes saw her by chance one day and ripped her off the runway. He made her his wife after a 6-month whirlwind romance, and the pair hadn't looked back since. While Esmeralda had left her days of fast living behind, Taryn daydreamed of fashion and seeing her name in big city lights. She stayed up late at night looking at pictures of her mother's past, imagining what it was like to live out her dreams, partying in Saint-Tropez, gracing the covers of magazines and billboards, being the center of the world's attention. The thought alone left Taryn breathless. She wanted to be just like her mother, the world's next beautiful face, but her parents kept her on a tight leash. Taryn was being bred for medical school. All of the top universities in the country were recruiting her, as if she were a 100% free throw shooter. After graduation, Taryn was on the fast track to success. Her parents had made sure of that. They wanted a normal, slow-paced, comfortable life for their pride and joy. The service ended and Taryn whispered, "Finally." The pinch that Esmeralda delivered to her backside caused her to squeal in pain as the two ladies made their way to the front of the church to greet the priest. "Excellent service, Father John," Esmeralda said, as she stood with grace and elegance before him.
"Esmeralda and the lovely Ms. Taryn, glad to see you in the crowd this morning. Now if I could only get Emilio to attend," the priest insinuated.
"Yes, Emilio sends his regards, Father," Esmeralda said. She reached into her handbag and pulled out an envelope full of money, $10,000 to be exact. "He sends very warm regards." Father John quickly tucked the envelope under one arm and nodded. It was Estes's spiritual contributions that kept the church lights on. Estes liked to think he was balancing out the sins that he committed by giving to the church.
"Give him my best," Father John replied.
The ladies made their way to the exit, and like clockwork, their bodyguard, Ricardo, stood to his feet. He had sat tucked away in the back row, but while others had come to hear the word of God, Ricardo listened to none of it. His eyes and ears stayed in tune with Esmeralda and Taryn. At Estes's orders, he escorted them to Mass each week and ensured their safety.
"This way," he said,
as he cleared a path through the crowd and led them outside where a shiny Lincoln town car awaited. Like royalty, they entered the vehicle and pulled away as their driver took them to the palace they called home. Palm trees lined the road leading to their plush Miami mansion. As it sat behind the steel-white gate, and as the Lincoln slid securely inside, Taryn felt as if she were being returned to prison. She loved her parents dearly, but at 17,
She was ready to be let off the tight leash that they had on her. While her friends were partying and bullshitting their senior year away, Taryn was contemplating her future. The last thing she wanted to do at her age was think about the future. She was trying to live it up in the present. She had the rest of her life to act old. For once, she just wanted to be young and reckless. What was the point of having access to all of the best things in life if you were restricted from enjoying it?
Take your head out of the clouds, Taryn,
Esmeralda said, seeing the faraway look in her daughter's eyes. She knew that Taryn wanted to stretch her wings and fly, but when your father was a kingpin, you had to live by a code. She didn't understand that her parents' strict rules kept her safe. If they took them away, the little naive, safe, comfortable bubble she lived in would burst. Taryn hadn't been groomed for survival. Without her parents, she wouldn't have a clue how to navigate in the big, bad world, especially the streets of Miami. Taryn nodded and changed the subject as the car came to a stop in their circular driveway.
I need to study. Can I go to the library?
As long as you take Fredro,
Esmeralda said.
Mommy, Fredro? I'm only going to the library, and I'll be home as soon as it closes at 10 o'clock. Breeze can pick me up. I'll go straight there and come directly home. Is a bodyguard really necessary?
She asked. Esmeralda sighed.
No, I suppose not. But the library is 20 minutes from here. If you're not home by 10:30, I'll send out the entire cavalry.
Mama!
Taryn exclaimed. Esmeralda chuckled at Taryn's dismay.
Relax, sweetheart. It was a joke. Your father and I just want to protect you is all. We simply want the best for you. The choices that we've made, the lifestyle that we lead, it glitters from the outside, but it dulls your spirit, Taryn. I want more for you. I love you.
You and Papa aren't this hard on Sam,
Taryn replied.
Your brother can take care of himself. He's a boy. It's different with him. And if I could steer him in a different direction, I would. But a young man is going to do what he wants to do,
Esmeralda replied.
We are hard on you because we love you, Taryn.
I know,
Taryn replied. Esmeralda exited the car, and Taryn followed her into their plush Miami home. Estes's signature Cuban cigars permeated through the entire first level of the home, and the smell hit Taryn as soon as she walked into the house. She immediately saw the disposition on her mother's face. Esmeralda hated the smell of cigars and didn't want her custom Italian imported furniture to soak up the scent of the cigar. Usually, Estes would keep his habit contained to his private study, but today it stunk up the entire house. Taryn smirked slightly at how tense her mother's face was and went off to find her father to warn him about the cigar smoke before he felt her mother's wrath. To her surprise, she found her brother sitting at the kitchen table with a blunt hanging from his mouth. He had been gone the entire summer and wasn't due back for another week.
Sam, you're back,
she exclaimed. She looked quickly over her shoulder and then added,
you know Mama is going to kill you, right?
Sam took one last long pull of the blunt, and then he held it out for Taryn. He saw her hesitation.
Don't be a punk, T. It's only weed,
Sam challenged. Taryn quickly hit the blunt and held it like a pro before blowing the smoke out in perfect O's. Sam laughed and pointed his finger at her.
I knew you and your homegirl Breeze be blowing trees. You've just got Mama and Estes fooled. You're not as innocent as you seem.
Not hardly,
she replied with laughter before passing it back to Sam.
Mama and Papa just think I'm a baby. I can handle myself. Growing up around here, I know a little bit about a lot.
Sam smirked as he saw the transformation from little girl to young woman happening before his eyes. He was guilty of babying Taryn as well. No one wanted to admit that she was no longer a child, but a blossoming and beautiful young woman. Sam put the blunt back to his lips. The sound of her father clearing his throat caused them both to freeze. They both turned towards the sound to find Emilio Estes, their father, and Miami's kingpin standing behind them. Tension filled the room as Estes crossed the room, taking the weed-filled cigar from his son's fingertips.
My fault, Papa. I didn't know yous would be coming home so soon. I was going to air it.
Estes looked over his shoulder and then hit the blunt long and hard. The silk Versace shirt he wore complemented the matching slacks. Taryn saw stars when she looked at Estes. He was just a smooth player in her eyes. When Estes walked into a room, he commanded the attention from everyone in it. He was a boss, a king who ruled with an iron fist, but still, the streets showed him love. He blew the smoke out and then snuffed out the blunt in the kitchen sink.
Your mama's going to kill you, he said. Open a window or something, or you'll never hear the end of it.
He patted Sam's back.
It's good to have you home, son. I hope you learned something over the summer. A little hard work never hurt anyone. Hopefully it calmed you down some, taught you the value of being a logical thinker. I don't need any more hotheads around, Sammy. I've got enough goons, enough trigger men. I need you to be quick on your feet, son, to be a born leader.
Sam nodded.
I understand, Papa.
Taryn stood quietly until her father left the room. Before he exited, he kissed her softly on the top of the head and said,
You hit another blunt and I'll take away your weekly allowance for 2 months. Respectable women don't smoke. Not a cigarette, not a joint, and certainly not a blunt.
Estes said, I see everything. He pointed back to Sam.
Lead by example.
Taryn knew not to take her father's threats lightly. He could never harm a hair on her head, but hitting her pockets was hitting her where it hurt. He gave her a $3,000 allowance per month. Losing that was not worth the high. She didn't respond as she watched him leave. Taryn and Sam burst into laughter as soon as their father was out of earshot.
I'm glad you're home, Taryn said. Me too, sis. Me too. Shit was cool up north and all, but I'm ready to get to the money. Miami is where it's at.
Chapter 4.
I promise I'll be back by 10:30,
Taryn shouted to her mother as she raced down the stairs and darted to the front door.
Mia, hold up,
Estes said sternly as he stood to his feet. Taryn stopped nervously as she held her MCM bag close to her body so that Estes couldn't see the change of clothes that she had inside.
I'll walk you out.
Estes escorted Taryn all the way to Breeze's car.
Where you guys headed tonight, Breeze?
Estes asked as he bent down into the car to give a quick once-over with his eyes.
Just the library, sir,
Breeze replied. Taryn and Breeze had their story down, so there was no way that Estes could poke holes in their lie. They were like Thelma and Louise. They had been friends too long and had come into adolescence together. Not even Estes could outwit the clever, mischievous twosome. They were putting on a full show, with book bags, textbooks, and everything. By the time they pulled away from the house, they had even convinced Estes to let Taryn stay out until 11:30 so they could stop for a late-night bite to eat on the way home. There was no one slicker than a teenage girl. Taryn lied her ass off, and before she knew it, she was sitting at the drive-in, where all the live niggas hung out on a Saturday night. The shining brought the entire hood out, and everybody was shining. In their discreet clothing, no one noticed Taryn and Breeze. They were just two young girls on the set trying to be down. But as soon as the girls went to the bathroom and swapped into their fly girl clothes, they turned heads. Taryn's high-waist leggings hugged her curves, and she wore a tight silk shirt with a fitted, cropped, bolero-style jacket. She was fly with her hair pulled on top of her head and an oversized bun that showed off the features of her flawless baby face. With door knocker earrings graced on her ears and a gold ring for every finger on her right hand, Taryn made the trends look good as she stepped out of the bathroom completely transformed. With Breeze by her side, the twosome looked as if they had stepped straight off of the set of Madonna's latest video. Every hood boy in the city was out, and although the movie was playing, the show was in the people watching. Nobody paid attention to the flick. Posted up on the hoods of cars, everyone parlayed as they popped big shit and guzzled down cheap liquor, all in the name of having a good time. Taryn was in her element. This small bit of freedom was everything to her. Being out amongst her people, mingling with the movers and shakers, the get-money niggas, made her come alive. She would rather live fast and die young than move slow and grow old.
There's your fine brother, T. If he quit playing, we can be sisters for real,
Bree said, as she saw stars as Sam pulled up and parked his BMW directly across from them. Taryn chuckled, but her heart sank because she knew that Sam was about to bust up the party. While he was out of town, she had been able to be on the scene. But now that he was home, she was sure that he would snitch her out. In some ways, he was just as overprotective as Estes.
Great,
she mumbled, as she watched him cross the parking lot and head towards her. She climbed down off the hood of the car with Breeze on her heels.
Hey, Sammy,
Breeze crooned.
You always looking for trouble, little girl,
Sam replied as he hit her with a smile.
In 3 more years, I'ma see if you about all that good shit you like to pop. Believe that. Why wait 3 years when you can make me your girl now?
Breeze replied.
Because right now, you're jailbait,
Sam answered.
You shouldn't even be out here.
He turned to Taryn, addressing her.
Library, huh? It's no big deal. I just wanted to get out of the house, Sam. Come on, please don't ruin this for me,
Taryn pleaded.
I swear, we'll leave in a little bit. Just let us hang out for a while. Pretend like you didn't even see me.
Yeah, right, Sam scoffed as he grabbed her forearm. And if something happens to you, Estes will have my fucking head. I'm not going to snitch you out, but you stay near me all night. And don't be clucking in no niggas' faces out here. I don't want to have to rock a nigga jaw tonight. I'm supposed to be parlaying with my people, but instead I'm babysitting you.
Sam pulled her across the parking lot to his car and said, you're with me tonight.
Taryn folded her arms across her chest and sucked her teeth while rolling her eyes.
Don't trip, girl,
Breeze whispered in her ear.
Your brother is the biggest player on the block. It's cool. Let's just chill. I'd rather be sitting on top of his BM than on top of my mom's hoopty.
Breeze laughed as she reveled in the moment. Sam was the guy that all the chicks wanted. A hothead rich nigga with power and affiliation. And right now, Breeze was by his side. She loved it, but Taryn's night had been completely ruined.
Yo, Taryn, this is my man Carter. He's from Flint,
Sam said, as he pointed in Carter's direction.
You already know Loso, he finished,
nodding toward his best friend.
Fellas, this is my baby sis and her homegirl, Breeze. Watch out for that one,
he said, giving Breeze a flirtatious smirk.
She's trouble.
What up, Taryn?
Loso spoke.
Loso,
she spoke, giving him a dry greeting. The Haitian kid had been chasing after Taryn ever since the first day he had saw her, but Loso wasn't her speed. He could have any girl in the city. With his long money and even longer reputation, he was one of the young hustlers that was on a fast come-up. He was connected to the Haitian mob out of Little Haiti, and when he linked up with Sam, the two became fast friends. They made money hand over fist, controlling a large piece of real estate in the roughest parts of Dade County. The crack era had just emerged, and the way they were burning through product, the sky was the limit for the pair. The only problem was Loso's temper, and he kept Sam in petty street beefs. He had an issue with his hands, and any chick associated with him always got the short end of the stick. Yes, he would lace them in MCM. Yes, he would keep their pockets nice, have them in the salon every 3 days and rocking the latest sneaks on their pretty feet. But he also gave them black and blue bruises to sport.
When you gonna stop playing games and let me sport you around the city, T?
Loso asked, as he talked sweet in her ear, making every other girl on the scene that night green with envy.
You can't afford to sport me, Loso,
Taryn replied, as she shrugged him off her shoulder. Loso pulled 3 thick knots of money out of his pocket.
I can buy you anything your pretty heart desires, T. I'm the money man around this bitch. I've got the seeds to the money tree,
he bragged, as he pulled out a small rock of crack cocaine and held it up to her face.
See, that's what I'm talking about, Loso. Money can't buy you class,
she answered. She stepped away from him and walked over to Breeze, who was wrapped up in a conversation with Sam.
I'm bored with this. I'm going to sit in the car and watch the movie. Come with me to get some popcorn?
Taryn asked.
Nah, girl, I'm good right here,
Breeze replied without ever taking her eyes off of Sam. The little bit of attention he was giving her was blowing her mind. He had always ignored her before, because of the 3-year age difference, but tonight she was looking grown and acting grown. The truth of the matter is, Taryn and Breeze were both young and beautiful with attitudes to match. They thought they had the world figured out, but were virgins in more than one sense. They were perfect for an up-and-coming hustler. They were moldable and a prize piece to have on any young man's arm. It was hard for Sam to get out of Breeze's web once he was already caught in it, especially when she spun it so good. Taryn stalked away towards the concession stand, pissed that everyone seemed to be having a good time except for her. There would be no flirting, no drinking, no smoking, no fun for her tonight. Taryn ordered popcorn and candy, then reached in her purse to pay. "Your money's no good when I'm around." "I've got it," Carter said, as he pulled out a $20 bill and placed it on the countertop. "Big spender," Taryn remarked sarcastically as she rolled her eyes and grabbed her stuff, then turned on her heels to walk back toward her brother's car. "All you Miami chicks got bad attitudes, or is it just your thing?" Carter asked as he watched her walk away. Taryn turned around abruptly, slightly taken aback that he had spoken to her so bluntly. "Excuse me? I did something nice for you. A thank you is the proper response," Carter replied. "It's just popcorn," Taryn said. "You act like you bought me a diamond ring or something. You get that attitude together and stick around long enough, I just might," he answered. He walked past her and reached into her bag of popcorn, taking a handful. Taryn narrowed her eyes and looked at him snidely. "What's your name again? Corey?" She couldn't help but smile afterwards, because they both knew that she was being a smartass. "You a comedian, huh?" he asked, as he returned her smile. Taryn's heart skipped a beat as she noticed his perfect set of white teeth, and she took a moment to take him in. He was fresh, in an authentic Adidas tracksuit and crispy white shell toes to match. The navy blue outfit rested nicely against his stocky, 6-foot frame, and his dark chocolate skin was smooth. Taryn checked out his nail beds and smiled when she found they were clean. She felt that she could tell a lot about a dude by 3 things, his shoe game, his hands, and his car. She looked over to the space next to her brother's vehicle and saw a black Chevelle sitting beside it. It wasn't luxury, but it wasn't shabby either. It was different, just like the young man standing in front of her. Carter's presence was unique to the suave flow of Miami. While all the local hustlers around them were rocking expensive Italian designers, silk shirts, and pressed slacks with hard-bottom shoes, Carter brought swag. He was dope boy fresh, confident, masculine, and charmingly handsome. Miami hustlers wore the curly activated hair, but Carter's low-cut Caesar was fresh and nice waves circled his dome. Taryn liked what she saw, and the feeling was mutual. The way his eyes glistened under the night sky told Taryn that he approved of her. He was enjoying the view before him. "Where are you from? You're clearly not from Miami, Poppy," Taryn said. "Flint," he responded. "You got a last name?" she asked. He chuckled as he rubbed the growing goatee on his young chin. "You ask a lot of questions." She put a hand on her hip and raised an eyebrow. "I like to know who I'm talking to." "Diamond," he relented. "Carter Diamond from Flint, Michigan," she said. He nodded in confirmation and waited for her to speak again. Taryn had his full attention, and although he appeared confident on the outside, his heart raced every time her pretty lips said his name. He felt a twinge of guilt as he thought of his girl back home, but he was here and she was there. He had to see what Miami had to offer, and right now, it was offering Taryn. She was in his presence, and she was so hard to turn away from. Taryn could tell that Carter's money wasn't long. He sported no jewels, his wrist game was non-existent, and she noticed that he didn't own a watch. He didn't even have that 3-star foreign symbol on the front of his car. But still, despite his meager and humble status in the game, something about him appealed to her. She could see the hunger in his eyes, the ambition, the determination. He was on the come up for sure. Otherwise, he wouldn't even be hanging around Sam. Most girls wouldn't give Carter a second glance when measuring him up against the major players that were in attendance that night. But Taryn was no fool. Carter would win the marathon. He wasn't in the game for a short sprint. He seemed smart, and she liked him almost instantly. The way he penetrated her with his eyes made her want to squeal into a pillow. He excited her, quickened her pulse, and made her breaths shallow. Taryn was smitten, and she didn't even know him yet.
"Thank you for paying for my stuff," she finally said.
She headed back towards her brother's car, then stopped to turn back towards Carter.
"Can I sit in your car to watch the rest of the movie?"
Carter could tell she was younger than he was. She had a naivete that came with inexperience, and although she played tough, Carter could tell she was vulnerable.
"Yeah, that's cool, shorty," he said.
They walked back over to the crowd, and Loso frowned when he saw them approach together. The smile on Taryn's face irked his soul. He had come at Taryn a million different times in a million and one different ways, but always received this same response. Fuck no. So seeing her so receptive to Carter's conversation was a punch to his inflated ego.
"I got to be a broke nigga to get some play tea? You like 'em with empty pockets, huh, girl?"
Loso cracked, causing the small crowd of followers that had assembled around their space to laugh.
"What?"
Carter challenged, as he removed his hands from the small of Taryn's back and stiffened his stance.
"Yo, chill out, Loso. Carter's good people. He's fam. Cut the fucking jokes,"
Sam said over his shoulder. He was too consumed in breeze to even look towards the commotion.
"I'm just joking with homie. I'm just saying, Taryn, I've been approaching you all wrong. You into little niggas,"
Loso said as he shook his head. He patted his chest arrogantly.
"I'll never be that."
Taryn could see the steam shooting from Carter's ears as his jaw clenched. Taryn pulled his hand gently, and the feeling of her soft skin in the palm of his large hands calmed him. Carter bit his inner jaw. He wasn't one to let anyone disrespect him, and Loso was rubbing him wrong. He could sense the malice from Sam's right-hand man, and knew that the Haitian kid was going to be a problem, even if it was all fun and games. Carter wasn't a giggle-and-games type of nigga. He'd slump Loso before he allowed him to disrespect him. Tonight was Loso's lucky night. It was because of Taryn that Carter kept a cool head. The next time, Carter would introduce Loso to his friend Nina. Carter felt the 9mm pistol that rested near his waist and shook his head before turning back to Taryn.
"I'm going to shake, shorty," he said.
He turned to Sam.
"Get with me tomorrow, Sam. I'm out."
Sam finally came up from out of Breeze's trance and looked at Carter.
"You good, Carter? Don't worry about Loso, crazy ass. The nigga don't mean no harm. He takes some getting used to. We good?"
"I'm up, though," Carter said. Dismay spread across Taryn's face. She was enjoying his company, and the last thing she wanted was for the night to be over so quickly. She knew that she couldn't show too much interest in her brother's friend, so she slyly checked her watch.
"Breeze, we've got to go, too. I told Estes I'd be back by 11:30,
Taryn said. Breeze sighed and pulled away from Sam.
"I've got to go, Sammy,"
she said.
"Hopefully you will stop playing games and we can pick this up another time."
"We can keep this going now. You got a curfew too?" Sam asked.
"Nah, but I've got to get tea home. You already know. Breeze, I've got to go. Carter can drop me off,"
Taryn said. She turned towards him.
"I mean, can you drop me off?"
Sam stood to his feet.
"You already know that's not a good idea, Taryn. I'll take you."
Breeze saw the eager look on Taryn's face and knew that her friend was feeling Carter. She leaned into Sam's ear and whispered,
"Or you can let him drop her off so you can stay here with me."
Sam reluctantly agreed as he watched Carter open the door for his sister. Breeze ran over to the passenger window and kissed Taryn on the cheek.
"You owe me,"
she sang in her ear.
"When you have that fine nigga baby, you better name it after me, because I just hooked you up."
Breeze cracked with a wide grin.
"A daughter named Breeze? Ha!"
Taryn joked back. She looked over at Carter, then turned back to her best friend.
"I can see her now," Breeze winked and said. "Have fun."
Carter entered the car, and Taryn felt nervous butterflies as he pulled out of the parking lot and away from the drive-in. He was quiet, and the air was awkward as they rode in silence. She peeked at him out of the corner of her eye. His square jawbone was chiseled, and the darkness of the interior made him seem mysterious. "So where you stay, shorty?" he asked.
I live in Aventura, she replied. "But I don't really want to go home."
Carter glanced at her and gave her a crooked half smile.
"You looking for trouble? Did I find it?" she replied.
Carter shook his head and turned the car around, headed to his place. When they pulled up to the hood, Taryn peered out of the window. She had been to Liberty City before, but never at night. As the sound of gunshots thundered in the background, Taryn turned to Carter.
"Is it cool here? I feel like it's not safe," she said honestly, with worry lacing her tone.
"I take it this is a far cry from the palace Daddy has his princess in, huh?" Carter asked.
Taryn was spooked. She claimed to be a lot of things, but Hood was never one of them.
"Whenever you're with me, you're good, shorty," he said confidently.
He got out of the car, and although he found Taryn a little pampered, he loved the fact that she didn't touch car doors. He noticed that she always waited for him to open them for her. She had been groomed well. She was a real lady, and therefore he would treat her as such. He opened her door and took her hand. They walked past the winos that littered the block and crowded the front entrance to his building, then entered. The aroma of piss and malt liquor filled the air as they stepped up the dirty staircase. Taryn's nose scrunched in horror as she held onto Carter tightly. Finally, they reached his apartment door. She was half afraid of what it would look like on the inside, but to her pleasure, it was decent. It was a bachelor's pad for sure, but it was clean and smelled like cinnamon. He didn't have much. A huge floor model TV, a leather sectional sofa, and a rug filled the space. The walls were bare. Sheets hung at the windows instead of curtains, and no decorations filled the space.
"I like it. You just need a woman's touch," she said with a smile.
"Outside, your door needs an entire makeover. It's scary out there."
He laughed as he went to the refrigerator and pulled out a beer. She walked towards him and said,
"You don't offer your guests a drink?" "You're what, 16? He asked.
"I'm 18, she replied effortlessly.
He looked at her in amusement.
"Look, shorty, I respect you, and I want to keep respecting you. In order for me to do that, you've got to be straight up with me. I don't respect the line, motherfucker. I want to be able to trust the people I have around me. You keep a G with me, and I'll keep a G with you at all times," he said.
The way he spoke made her panties wet, and she sighed, then rolled her eyes.
"I'm 16.
You act 16, he replied with a laugh.
"You clowning me now, Carter? How old are you?"
"I'm 18, but the streets raised me, shorty. I've got an old soul," he replied. "What's up with your man Loso? You used to fuck with him or something?"
"He couldn't get a whiff of this,"
Taryn shot back as she frowned at the thought of Loso.
"Who could?" Carter asked.
"You could," she replied.
She covered her mouth right after the words left it, wishing that she could take them back.
"Did I just say that out loud?"
she thought, embarrassed. The look of amusement on Carter's face told her that she had. Her face turned crimson red as she cleared her throat and lowered her eyes to the floor.
"I mean, if I was your girl, and if you earned it."
Carter finished the beer and rinsed it out before throwing it in the trash. Taryn watched the way that he moved, listened to the way he put his words together. Everything about him was so attractive to her. He commanded her and tamed her in ways that not even her parents could.
"I want to take you out on a date. You know, dinner, movie, whatever you want," he said. "My parents don't let me date, and Sam definitely wouldn't let me near one of his friends," she said.
"I'm not into sneaking around," Carter said. "That's kids' games. I'm not into that."
Taryn could sense Carter's maturity, but it didn't make the sting of rejection any less painful. She grabbed her clutch bag.
"It's late. I shouldn't have come here. Can you take me home now?" she asked.
Carter felt badly for hurting her feelings, but he knew that getting mixed up with Taryn could make so many things go bad. His first focus was getting money. Taryn was a young girl with too many rules, rules that Carter would undoubtedly break. It was better for them both if he just walked away now. A relationship between the two of them would be nothing but trouble. Carter saw her face turn down in a pout as she marched to the door.
"Taryn," he called after her.
She faced him,
Can we just go? I'm a kid, remember? I've got a curfew.
You know I didn't mean it like that, he said, as he stood in front of her, trapping her body between himself and the door. She stared into his chest as she refused to raise her head to look at him. He made her nervous, and he smirked because he was all bark with no bite. She played tough, acted grown, but was neither. He intimidated her.
Yeah, whatever. Just please take me home,
she replied, being hard. But her heart was pounding, galloping, jumping like a gymnast was performing inside of her chest.
I can't fuck with you like you want me to, shorty. I'm doing business with your brother. Women always complicate things. I need my arrangement with Sam to go smoothly, Carter explained. Just because I can't doesn't mean that I don't want to. If things were different, maybe I would feel you. You're beautiful, shorty. You're just young. You can't be loyal to me and loyal to your daddy, too. My girl has to choose me. Has to be down for me above everything and everyone else.
His thoughts shot to Tanya briefly, but Taryn's face was blocking the fact that he had a girl back home. As he spoke, he lifted her chin so that he was sure that she heard him, but all Taryn could focus on was his lips. She touched his face and stood on her tiptoes to kiss his lips. Electricity sparked between them as she opened her mouth, inviting his tongue inside. Carter was a great kisser. His big lips covered hers as his sweet tongue explored the grooves of her mouth and danced sensually with her tongue. He was making her cream. Her nipples hardened, and Taryn's body begged to be touched. She had never felt so alive in her life. Every nerve ending on her body was sensitive as his hands roamed her body, gripping her hips and pulling her ass into him. Their labored breaths were all that could be heard as they kissed passionately, deeply. Taryn didn't even know Carter, but she wanted to know him better. At this point, she was determined to be his girl. A moan escaped her lips as Carter picked her up, her legs wrapped around his waist as he gripped the back of her neck. Taryn felt insecure suddenly. Everything that Carter was doing to her felt so good, but truthfully, she had never gone this far with a guy before. She had never been in a circumstance for a guy to do more than kiss her. Now here she was, in an apartment with one of Sam's friends, and although it felt right, she began to question herself. Would she be good at it? Would it hurt? Would Carter be gentle with her? He felt her body tense as her thoughts made her stiffen.
Carter?
She whispered between kisses.
Hmm?
He replied.
I've never done this before,
she said. Carter paused and pulled his face away from hers. He could see the panicked look in her eyes.
You're a virgin?
He asked. She nodded, embarrassed. It took everything in Carter to pull away from her. Her body was calling out to him, but her eyes told him that she was in over her head. He placed her on her feet, then lifted her chin so that she had to look at him.
Now you really think I'm a kid, she said. That makes you more mature than I thought. Hold your head up, shorty. That's a badge of honor, not something to be embarrassed about. Any nigga you give that to, you make him earn it. You're beautiful, shorty. The nigga that gets you is the lucky one, not the other way around. Remember that,
he schooled. He bent down to kiss her lips one more time because he didn't know if he would ever get the chance to do it again. She melted at his touch.
Let's get you home, he said.
Carter pulled up to Taryn's home and was blown away by how lavishly she lived. He had joked around about her being a princess, but she truly was. The mansion was immaculate.
Cut the lights and don't pull through the gates. You can drop me right here.
She pointed to the curb ahead of them. She didn't want to pull in front of her home. Her father's henchmen patrolled the perimeter of their home, and they would definitely snitch her out if they saw her hopping out of the car.
I don't want anyone to see me getting out of your car,
she said honestly. He did as he was told and waited for her to exit the car, but she sat. She didn't want her night with him to be over.
I like you, Carter,
she admitted. He had told her to be honest with him, so she was.
You don't even know me, shorty. I'm not all compliments and chivalry. I have a lot of flaws, he said. I feel like this is the end of something good, like you're writing me off before we can even get to know each other,
Taryn replied.
Look around you, Taryn. You have everything. I have nothing. Let me bring something to the table before I come at you. I don't want to take you from this to the slums. I like you, shorty, but I've got to get my paper up.
I've got to keep my head in the streets. This is far from the end. It's just not the beginning. Let me get my setup right, and I'll see you around. By the time I'm ready, you'll be a little older. It doesn't help that you're jailbait, he said with a charming smile. She popped open her door. Oh, so you do touch door handles, he cracked. She couldn't help but smile as she got out. Good night, Carter Diamond. Chapter 5. Can you handle this, Sammy? Estes asked, as he stood with his son at his stash spot. 15 bricks lay on the table in front of them, and Sam was already counting the profit from the sale to come. All he saw right now was green. Estes had never let him handle more than 2 kilos at a time, so he had been restricted to breaking it down and hitting the block, but now he had finally graduated to weight. I'm good, Papa, he assured. A friend of mine from Flint is making the exchange with me. His name is Carter. I know who he is, Estes said. Sam had never spoken of Carter to his father before, but he knew better than to underestimate Emilio Estes. Estes knew everything and everyone associated to himself and his family. I don't want Loso anywhere near my cocaine, mijo, Estes stressed. Understood, Sam answered. Estes looked at his son with serious intent and said, If you foul this up, Sam, you're done. I won't supply you anymore. I want to hand all of this over to you one day, but you have to show me that you can handle it. Otherwise, the game will swallow you up. Don't want to have to see you behind steel and concrete. Move smart. The fast flip isn't always the best one. Sammy soaked up the knowledge like a sponge. Eager to prove himself to Estes, he was determined to triple his worth. He had a new Cuban out of Little Havana who was trying to buy heavy, and Sam was the perfect connect. He had the best coke at the best prices. Estes's Dominican blood was pure, and he got the kilos by the boatload, shipped straight to him from the Dominican Republic. His hold over the Miami streets was strong. No one else could supply the local hustlers with the quality that Estes provided. Sam began placing the bricks in a black duffel bag, then tossed it over his shoulder before heading out. The Miami streets passed him in a blur as he sped to Carter's neighborhood. Like clockwork, Carter was waiting curbside with a look of irritation on his face. You're late, Carter said as he stepped inside.
Yeah, I'm here now, fam, Sam responded. Take a look in the bag in the back seat.
Carter reached over the seat and pulled the bag to the front. He unzipped it and saw the prettiest pack of white bitches he had ever seen. The bricks were neatly wrapped in cellophane and sparkled slightly from the purity.
Damn,
was all that he could say. He zipped the bag and placed it between his legs. The back seat was too far away for his tastes.
We about to take all of this shit over, Sam said. Estes still letting the little niggas eat, letting them slang that bullshit-ass product. But now that I've got access to the bricks, it's time out for that. If you ain't pushing your shit, you ain't moving nothing. I'll set you and Loso up on opposite ends of Dade County. You'll run one, he'll run the other. You'll have to put together a squad of little workers to run your blocks, but nobody should handle the wholesale but you. Estes trusts me with the weight, and I only trust you. You showed me honor back in Flint, so I know you won't snake me. We'll split the profits. You and Loso will each get 30%. I'll take 40, since I'm the one getting the product. Either way, we'll be swimming in dough. You'll have so much, you won't know what to do with it. You'll be sleeping on money, fucking bitches on top of money, wiping your ass with money, fam. We on.
Carter cracked a smile. You wild, man, he commented. What's the plan for the night? You know this nigga we meeting?
Nah, but Loso set it up. He'll meet us there. I just need you to have my back tonight. Be my eyes and ears.
Carter nodded and let Sam's proposition settle into his brain. He knew a good money scheme when one was presented to him. He was in. They pulled up to a Cuban restaurant. It was close to midnight, so nothing was moving on the block, and it appeared as if the restaurant was closed. The flash of headlights caught their attention.
That's Loso,
Sam said. He pulled up on him.
Fuck he doing here?
Loso asked, as he sat behind the wheel of his car, gripping the steering wheel with one hand and fiddling with a toothpick that hung from his mouth with the other.
He here because I want him here. Fuck you worried about him for? Where your people at?
Sam shot back, clearly impatient
and not beat for the bullshit. They're here. I saw them go inside like 15 minutes ago, Loso informed. Sam pulled to the side of the street and parked the car. Leave the keys in the ignition, Carter said. What? Sam replied. You never know how quick you might have to get away from some shit like this. Anything go bad? Police show up? I don't want to have to fiddle through pockets to find keys. What about you? Carter questioned. Sam reached over and hit Carter's chest proudly.
My man! See? That's why I need you! You think about shit like that.
Carter checked the clip of his gun, flicked off his safety, and chambered one round before tucking it back in his waistline. They all exited their cars and approached the front of the restaurant. They tapped on the glass door, and it was immediately opened. A skinny brown-skinned kid answered the door. He wore a fedora hat and white linen pants and a white wife beater. Carter's eyes slid to the kid's hip, where he located a gun.
We're here to see Javier,
Sam said. The kid eyed them suspiciously.
Lift your shirts,
he demanded, as he pulled out his own gun and trained it on the three young men. They lifted their shirts, and the kid removed the guns that they had concealed in their waists.
No guns, he said. You'll get them back before you leave. I'll go and get Javier.
The kid disappeared, going to the back of the restaurant, where a door separated the kitchen from the dining area. Carter's senses were in overdrive as he surveyed his surroundings. No one spoke. Finally, a group of Hispanic men emerged from the kitchen. You must be Sam, one of the men spoke up. He appeared to be middle-aged. He was definitely too old to still be in the game. Sam figured he had played it the wrong way if he was still copying his work from someone else. Javier should have easily been the boss by now, but bosses didn't buy kilos from 18-year-old New Jacks.
I'm Javier. You bring the stuff?
Carter handed off the bag to Javier, who then handed it off to one of his men.
Where's he going? You got the money?
Sam demanded.
Relax, kid. I've got your money right here,
Javier said.
But you don't get paid until I make sure your shit is good. He's going to test it. See if it numbs his gums, if you know what I mean. When he gives me the signal, I give you the cash.
Carter's neck was on a swivel. His sixth sense was working overtime. He just had a bad vibe about the entire setup. The product was nowhere in sight, and it seemed as if the nigga Javier was stalling for time.
Where's your man?
Carter asked.
I said he'll be back,
Javier responded. Carter's eyes drifted to the front entrance, and he saw Javier's henchman throwing the duffel bag of coke into the back seat of a car. Within the blink of an eye, chaos erupted as gunshots rang out. It was then that Carter realized that this wasn't a transaction, but a robbery. Javier never had any intentions on paying Sam. Defenseless, Sam was loaded up with bullets like Swiss cheese, and Loso, who was closest to the door, bolted. Carter immediately flipped a table and knelt behind it as he removed the extra pistol he kept in a holster on his ankle. Carter buzzed off without hesitation, laying out two of the goons with marksman's aim. The table he hid behind absorbed the shots that came his way, but he saw Sam bleeding to death on the floor a few yards away from him.
Oh, shit, Carter, man, help me!
Sam screamed out in distress. Javier had hopped behind the counter and was still spitting rounds of death toward him. Sam was down, and based on the amount of blood that was pooled beneath him, he didn't have much time left. Carter knew that his clip was almost empty. He only had 9 shots left before he would be asked out. He had no wins once his clip popped out of the bottom of his gun, so he had to end Javier before Javier ended him. Carter couldn't see Javier directly, but he saw his reflection in a mirror that hung from the restaurant wall. Javier was creeping to the right, breathing heavily as he frantically reloaded his clip, so Carter crept left. Carter opened fire, hitting the lower part of the bar, plugging holes in it until he hit his target.
Dog!
Javier's screams erupted.
You fucking puta!
Javier shouted in pain. Carter rounded the bar, gun in hand, enraged as he ran up on Javier, firing. He hit Javier twice, putting one bullet in each leg. He reached down and snatched the gun from Javier's hand. His rage bubbled over as he pistol-whipped Javier to a bloody pulp. He stumbled backwards, exhausted, as he wiped the sweat that dripped from the tip of his nose.
Carter!
Sam's moan snapped Carter out of his daze,
and he rushed to Sam's side. It looked bad, very bad.
Get me to a hospital, man. Hurry up. It burns, Carter. Get me to the fucking hospital, please,
Sam pleaded. Carter knew that a begging man was a dying man, but he kept a poker face for Sam's sake.
I'm dying, Carter. I'm dying, man,
Sam said, as he choked up blood. There were so many holes in his body that Carter couldn't tell exactly where he was hit.
You're not dying, fam. You're not dying,
Carter said, as he tried to pick Sam up. The scream that erupted from Sam was one of a wounded animal.
I've got to pick you up, Sam. It's gonna hurt, but I've got to,
Carter yelled, distressed. Carter picked him up and stumbled as he carried his body out of the restaurant. He opened the door and put Sam in the passenger side.
Please, man, I don't want to die,
Sam cried.
Just hold on, Sam,
Carter said, overwhelmed. He slammed the passenger door and then put his hands to the side of his head.
Fuck!
He shouted as he kicked the car. He knew that Sam wouldn't make it. He was already thinking how he would be the last one to see the son of Emilio Estes alive. How could he deliver the news that his only son had been killed? Carter raced back into the restaurant and ran over to the bar where Javier lay, bloodied and beaten. But he was not dead. Carter snatched the bag of money from Javier's side and then grabbed his legs as he began to drag him roughly out of the restaurant.
What are you doing? Fuck you! You fucking dickhead motherfucker!
Javier shouted through missing teeth and swollen, busted lips. Carter had done a number on Javier. He pulled his body all the way to the car and popped the trunk. He stuffed Javier inside, then hopped into the driver's seat, tucking the money under his seat, and sped away recklessly, burning rubber as sirens erupted in his ears. He slowed his pace to normal speed as he saw red and blue lights speeding towards the direction that he had just left. His hands shook as he looked over at Sam.
Just hold on. I'm going to get you some help, Carter said. Talk to me, man. Say anything. Just keep talking. If you go to sleep, you're dead.
I can't, man. I can't,
Sam whispered as he sat slumped in a pool of his own blood.
Tell my dad I'm sorry, man. Make sure you tell him.
Nah, Sammy. You're going to tell him that. Just hold on, Carter said.
Carter flew through the city streets trying to wrap his mind around the events that had just happened. He glanced at Sam.
Hey, don't get quiet on me, Sammy. Wake up,
Carter said. He tapped Sam, but got no response. His heart dropped into his stomach.
Sammy, wake up, he shouted.
He reached over and felt the side of his neck, checking for a pulse. He felt nothing. There was no life left in Sammy. He was gone. Carter closed Sam's eyes and hit the steering wheel in frustration. There was no way he was taking Sam to the hospital now, so there was only one place left to take him, home. He was still new to Miami, and finding Estes' house wasn't easy, but he finally managed to find the estate that he had dropped Taryn off at. He pulled up to the gates and was surprised to see a guard sitting in a booth overseeing the entrance. He hadn't been there the night he had dropped Taryn off, but tonight, he stood post.
Open the gate. I need to see Estes,
Carter said urgently. The guard stood and peered inside the car. He immediately pulled his gun on Carter when he saw Sam slumped and bloodied in the passenger seat.
Open the fucking gates,
Carter ordered.
I didn't kill him. You think I'd even come here if I did? I need to see Estes now.
The guard drew his weapon on Carter, and within seconds, two more of Estes's goons who had been patrolling the perimeter appeared and had their guns on Carter as well.
I need to see Estes! I didn't do this!
Carter shouted. One of the men went to the security booth and placed a phone call to the house, alerting Estes that something was awry. Moments later, Estes came rushing out of the house, and when he saw Sam's car parked at the gate, doors wide open, he took off in a run.
Papa, what's wrong?
Carter heard Taryn's voice cut through the air.
Estes?
Esmeralda screamed as she came out onto the front porch and watched Estes run across the yard towards the front gates. Estes didn't respond. In his heart, he knew that his worst fears had come true. He got to the gate, but the guards stopped him before he could get to Sam's car.
Take your hands off me before I see to it that you don't have any,
Estes seized. The guard quickly removed his grip, and Estes snatched violently away as he went to Sam's car.
No!
Estes shouted in agony.
Sammy, no!
Estes pulled his son's dead body from the car and carried him across the lawn as he rushed towards his wife and daughter. Blood covered his Versace robe, and his wife came running towards him with her hands covering her mouth.
No, Estes! No, Sammy!
She yelled when they met in the middle of the vast lawn. Esmeralda took one look at her slain child, and her heart broke.
Give me my baby! This is your fault! He was just trying to be like you! No, mijo! Wake up, Sammy!
Although Sam's body weight was too much for her to bear, she still cradled him in her arms as she let his weight push her to the ground. She wept over his body as Estes stood in shock with blood on his hands. He looked up, his eyes meeting the shocked and tear-filled eyes of his only living child. Taryn was in shock, and she felt the tears falling, but her face was expressionless. Her entire body felt numb. He turned on his heels and rushed back over to the guards, who still had Carter apprehended.
Let him go,
Estes stated firmly. Carter stood before Estes.
You have 2 minutes to tell me who you are and why you were the last person to see my son alive,
Estes said in a threatening tone.
My name is Carter Diamond. I'm a friend of Sammy's from Flint. He asked me to ride with him to make a drop in Little Havana. Shit went bad, and they took us for some suckers. Tried to rob us for the bricks, and bullets flew. I couldn't leave him there. When I dragged him out of there, he was shot bad, but he was still breathing. He died in the car. He wanted you to know that he was sorry. I couldn't take him to the hospital without them asking too many questions, so I brought him here, to you. I would never come to you empty-handed. The nigga that shot Sam is in the trunk of the car. I could have killed him, but I figured that it wasn't my revenge to seek,
Carter finished. Estes's men popped the trunk without him even having to ask. When they discovered Javier, one of them nodded to confirm Carter's story.
Take the car and get it out of here. Tack the nigga head to a stop sign in the middle of Little Havana,
Estes said.
Make sure he dies slow.
And what about him?
One of the men asked, referring to Carter. Carter saw Taryn creep up behind her father. Her hair was wild, unruly, while crystal clear tears fell down her cheeks. She wiped her nose.
He was Sam's friend, Papa,
she said, her voice so distraught that it cracked between every word. The sight of her made Carter's heart race, and he stared into her eyes as she vouched for him. He wanted to run to her, kiss her face, wipe her tears. He felt so much for her in that moment, but he loved his life and knew that to be close to Taryn was like being close to death with her father standing nearby.
Let him go,
Estes said. He turned his back and wrapped his arm around Taryn to escort her back towards the house. He stopped and turned to Carter.
Thank you.
Carter nodded, then watched as the gates closed and Taryn disappeared from sight.
Chapter 6.
The homegoing ceremony for Sam Estes was like a royal event. All of the street's elite came out to lay Emilio Estes's son to rest. Flowers filled the Catholic cathedral, and a solid gold casket sat sparkling at the front. Carter entered, feeling slightly out of place. His presence was mandatory for more than one reason. To not go would arouse suspicion in the role he played in Sam's death. Although he had nothing to do with it, he didn't need Estes to have any doubts in him. Despite that reason, Sam was a good friend. Their friendship had started out rocky. Where Sam had been flashy, Carter had been subdued. They were like yin and yang, but Carter soon learned how to appreciate their differences. He just wanted to pay his respects. He had kept the money that he had stolen from Javier. It was close to $100,000, and Carter had no problem keeping that cake. He wasn't a snake nigger, but he wasn't a dumb nigger either. That money belonged to Javier. He wouldn't be needing it where Estes had sent him. A dead man couldn't spend money, so Carter would put it to good use. He sat near the back of the church and listened to the priest as he memorialized the man who had died much too soon. His eyes rested on Taryn as soon as she walked into the room. Escorted between her mother and father, she was the vision of beauty, relieving to his eyes and healing to his heart. Just the sight of Taryn
brought a metaphorical sun to his rainy mood. He could see the weight of the world resting on her, as her brother's death caused her shoulders to hang. This was the first scar that had ever marred her perfect life. Her burdened heart barely beat nowadays. Their eyes met from across the room, and Carter gave her a nod of the head. He wished that she could bless him with her smile, but he knew that her face couldn't remember how to turn her lips upward to display happiness on such a somber day. Taryn held his gaze briefly, then looked away to refocus on her brother. A tap on the shoulder distracted him from her, and he looked up to see a large man clad in a black suit standing over him. Carter twisted his face up as the man placed a hand on his shoulder. He passed Carter a folded piece of paper. "Come and see me in 2 weeks." Carter looked up, knowing the note was from Estes. Estes nodded his head, and Carter returned the gesture. He knew that this was a pivotal moment in his life. Estes would either put him on or take his life. Going to see him would be a risk, but it was a risk that Carter was willing to take. After the service, Carter bumped into Loso in the lobby. He hadn't seen him since that fateful night. "Was good, fam?" Loso asked in a somber tone as he extended his hand. Carter smirked. "Now all of a sudden I'm fam," he thought. Carter left Loso's hand hanging in midair. "That's a nice watch you sportin'. What's that, a Rolex?" Carter asked slyly. Loso pulled his sleeve over his wrist. "Ah, that's nothing. A little gift from one of my little mamas," Loso said. "A gift, huh? Keep her around," Carter replied. "I'ma see you, though," he said, as he walked away. He saw Taryn retreat inside one of the church offices, and he looked around discreetly before following behind her. She turned around when she heard someone enter behind her and quickly tried to wipe the tears from her face.
"Carter,"
she gasped when she realized who it was. She ran to him, burying her face into his chest as he wrapped his arms around her as if they had known each other for years.
"Why did this happen?"
she whispered.
"I don't know, shorty,"
he responded honestly.
"I feel like my whole world is ending,"
she said. She clung to his forearms as she lowered her head while stifling her cries. She didn't know why she felt so comfortable with Carter. It was something about the way he handled her that made her feel safe.
"I promise you it isn't," Carter answered. "Sam was a good dude. I know this is hard for you. If you need anything..."
"I need you, Carter,"
she said.
"The night you dropped my brother's body at my house, my heart broke. But when I'm with you, around you, I can't explain it. I just need you. I know Miami isn't home for you. Sam was the only thing keeping you here."
"I'm not going anywhere, shorty. I'll be around. Whenever you need me, just call," Carter said.
He slipped her a piece of paper with his number written on it.
"You page me, and I'll call. It don't matter what time it is or what it's for. Just put in the code 777 so I'll know it's you. You understand?"
Taryn nodded her head and placed the number in her purse.
"I better get out there before my father sends someone looking for me," she said.
He nodded as he watched her head to the door. She stopped and rushed back over to him, kissing him deeply. His hands found a comfortable place around her thin waist as he pulled her close.
"You told me to give myself to a nigga that earned it."
"You did," she said.
"You earned it the moment you brought my brother's body home instead of leaving him to die alone in the middle of the night. I want to give myself to you, Carter Diamond."
"Go be with your family, Taryn. You're hurt, and I'm here. I don't want it when you're vulnerable. I want it to be me when you're sure,"
Carter replied.
"I've never been more sure of anything in my life."
Taryn kissed his lips one more time, then rushed out of the room. Carter saw everything in her. She had his heart on strings. But Carter knew that exploring something with Taryn was like playing with fire. She would either make a man of him or be the death of him. Only time would tell. To be continued. Carter Diamond Part 2, coming soon.
This concludes the reading of Carter Diamond, Before the Cartel He Stood Alone, by Ashley and Jaquavis. Copyright 2015 by Brookgate Publishing. This book was read by Carrie Height. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Brookgate Publishing and was produced in 2015 by Blackstone Audio, Inc. and Buck 50 Productions, LLC, which hold the copyright.
Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK, that's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.